Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports in the NBA and the host of the 312 podcast. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369, text and voicemail line. Hit us up anytime you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. Save that number you're in your phone as Locked On Bulls. 331-979-1369. Want to hear your voicemails this week, especially for Mailbag on Wednesday, so send those in for us. Any questions, comments, whether it's the playoffs, the draft, something about the Bulls free agency this summer, anything, any thoughts that you guys have, send it in via text or voicemail. 331-979-1369. Welcome back. This was a really good weekend for NBA playoffs, NBA storylines. This first round, I have to put it up for a little bit of an applause because this first round has been phenomenal. I think it's been a complete flip from last year, Matt, in terms of competitiveness, overall storylines, things that are going on. And maybe that's just partly because LeBron's having a little bit more struggle, a little bit more of a difficult time in this first round than he maybe has in past years. But how you doing? What's going on?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, I have been loving every second. I watched pretty much every single game this weekend, and I watched almost all of them in their entirety. I maybe, you know, checked out of one or two for a quick minute to, you know, leave the house and get a little bit of sunshine on my face for just a brief second. But other than that, I was locked in. All of these series are so entertaining. We saw three of the Eastern Conference series tied at 2-2 after yesterday's action, including another dramatic finish between the Pacers and the Cavs. That series is so entertaining. You got LeBron versus Lance and all that's going on there. You got Oladipo as a young star trying to knock off LeBron in the first round, which we have never seen happen before. The Bucks fight back against the Celtics. The Wizards fight back against the Raptors. I kind of thought that that was going to be a dud of a series, but that's turned out to be a pretty entertaining one. You had the Wolves scraping back against the Rockets, getting a Game 3 win, the first home playoff win for the Timberwolves since 2004. You got the Spurs and Manu Ginobili, the ageless wonder, fighting off the sweep from the Warriors yesterday. There's so many interesting storylines and so many interesting games. It's the first round hasn't even concluded and isn't close to concluding, and already the 2018 playoffs are a mile better than 2017. I can't wait to see what we get at the, you know, we probably will get at least one or two game sevens out of this, considering how many series are tied up at two right now. And I think it's just going to get better and better. But man, it's been a lot of fun to watch so far.
Yeah, the interesting thing here is that in the past, the LeBron-led teams in the East for seven straight years. Then you had the Golden State Warriors who stacked it up in the Western Conference. So over the last few years, I mean, the storyline is the same, and the NBA Finals has been spectacular every single year. But sort of these first round games tend to get a little bit boring. The storylines don't come out as big. But I thought this year, especially, and maybe like we'd said, that maybe that's a testament to
what Victor Oladipo and the Pacers are doing to LeBron and testing him and his limits. How about a game from Bojan Bogdanovic to dropping 30 on LeBron? We had the 76ers, who look like a team that's, like I said, you know, the odds.
They are terrifying. Like, how do they win game four?
I have no idea.
Brett Brown even said in his postgame, he was like, I can't conceivably figure out how we won that game. You know, Embiid had a terrible game offensively. They had almost 30 turnovers, and they still won that game. That Sixers team is terrifying.
I completely agree. And it's like Joel Embiid didn't even, he was terrible offensively, and they still locked up a win. So to me, it's like, okay, if Joel Embiid turns it on offensively, like, this is going to be a nightmare for teams. So you already saw, like, this Miami Heat team is very interesting, very well coached from Eric Spoelstra, but even them, like, the guys that are physical with some of these, like, you just can't stop a guy like Ben Simmons, who's 6'10", can drive to the basket, and you've got Joel Embiid down low, and then you've got guys like J.J. Redick and Robert Covington who are stepping up big in these.
Ex-Bull Marco Bellinelli, baby.
Marco Bellinelli.
Big shot Bellinelli.
And then they picked up, along with him, you know, that trade deadline pickup between Marco Bellinelli and then Ersan Ilyasova. So that team is very interesting, and it's been a whole hell of a lot of fun to watch. The one I want to get to, though, real quick, is the Celtics and Bucks series. So we talked late last week. We even answered a voicemail about Jabari Parker. But Jabari Parker making you eat your words a little bit here in this playoff series, where he came off complaining about the minutes that he was getting, not being on Prunty's good side, the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, turns it around. Prunty gives him more minutes, and Jabari takes it and takes every step, every inch that he gets in terms of minutes, and lights it up for the Bucks, and was an important part, along with Giannis, an important part for those two wins against the Celtics team that really, I didn't think that they should be really dominating, especially the way they did in those first two games. But definitely the Bucks are making this an interesting series.
They are, and it's because, you know, the Celtics, for as good of a coach as Brad Stevens is, and as good of a role-playing roster that they have, they are missing their star player. They don't have Kyrie, and that's crazy to think about. And that's why I think the Bucks have been able to fight their way back into this series. But, I mean, when you talk about why these playoffs are so exciting already in the first round, and we have all these juicy first-round matchups, so much of it, you talk about Parker having a bounce back, yeah, fine. But that Bucks team is still all about Giannis. And how about him coming up big with that late tip-in to hold off that furious Celtics rally and allow the Bucks to even that series? And why did the Celtics make that late rally? Because of their own young budding stars, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Those guys were knocking down big shots late in the fourth quarter. Everywhere you look in these first round series, you have young NBA stars making big time plays late and dominating games. A look at what Donovan Mitchell has been able to do for Utah in their series. They're up 2-1 on Russ. It's like, yeah, we all know and love the big names in the NBA playoffs. LeBron, KD, hopefully we'll get Steph back sometime soon. Russell Westbrook and Paul George doing their thing with OKC. Like, we all know those names, but so much of this first round has been about the young stars that are, I mean, holy crap, Anthony Davis. Watching the Pelicans sweep that series and the dominant performance he had, 47 points, like, it's the young guys who are making these NBA playoffs so exciting, and it makes you feel good about the future of the league.
To be honest with you, I think this is kind of weird to say this, but maybe it's because Steph is out for this first round, but don't you feel like the Golden State Warriors as a team, and maybe at that in their first round series, have kind of gone under the radar? It's not really the talked about series, talked about players. With all the other storylines going on in these first round playoff matchups, I just find it kind of weird because I've gotten almost used to it in terms of constantly being talked about Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, especially going to the playoffs. LeBron's, it's sort of done the same way to LeBron. I think this way he's getting more attention, not necessarily for positive things because that Cleveland team is such a mess, but I think it's kind of weird that like we're seeing this Golden State Warriors team kind of fly under the radar as much as they could possibly do with, you know, three All-Stars still on their team. But I think the storylines, like you were saying, with the young players in this league, especially in the playoffs, some of these guys for the first taste of their action, like Embiid and Ben Simmons, it's exciting. And I think as an NBA fan as a whole, and even if you're just a Bulls fan or you like the NBA in general, I think it's an exciting time to see a lot of rising young players. And you hope that maybe in a few years, the Bulls will be in that same position where you get your first playoff series with Lauri Markkanen maybe goes off, or Chris Dunn, or maybe even Zach LaVine. So, but it's definitely a great time to be an NBA fan right now, especially with these playoffs going on.
Yeah, you talk about Warriors kind of going a little bit under the radar, and it's, you know, partly because they took a commanding 3-0 lead on San Antonio, and even though the Spurs managed to get a win in Game 4 and avoid the sweep, I'd bet a sizable amount of money confidently on the Warriors closing out that series in Game 5. But, I mean, as far as a defending champion coming in and trying to repeat a team that has represented the West in the finals for the past 3 years, you're right. There is kind of just like a nobody's talking about the Warriors situation going on. And maybe, as you said, some of that has to do with Steph not being here yet. To me, that potential, assuming that the Warriors do take care of the Spurs, that second round series, as good as the Pelicans looked sweeping Portland, did you see that? Everybody, all of ESPN's NBA analysts did their, you know, predicting every first round series thing that they put up right as the playoffs were starting. Not a single one of them picked the Pelicans to beat the Blazers.
Really?
Yeah, it was a 3-6 series, but I mean, what if their records were different by like a game, maybe two? Yeah. And the Pelicans were red hot coming into the playoffs. And the Pelicans' Twitter feed, like, you know, screenshotted that and trolled ESPN. Nobody saw that coming. Certainly not a sweep. I just mentioned Anthony Davis a minute ago. Ex-Bulls Rajon Rondo and Nico Mirotic, and heck, even Etuan Moore. That team, with all the role players they have around Anthony Davis, the chemistry that Anthony Davis and Rondo have, how many oops and behind-the-back dimes collectively did Rajon Rondo and Anthony Davis team up for in that series? Like 100? If Steph takes his time coming back, and even if he does come back, and he's not 100% healthy, and he's rusty, and he doesn't have his wind with him, we saw what a not 100% healthy Steph can do to a Warriors team when they lost the finals and coughed up that lead against Cleveland. The Pelicans might actually put up a fight against them, and I can't wait to watch, because Anthony Davis, first thing he said post-game after 47 points in a sweep was, yeah, I remember getting swept by Golden State in my first ever playoff series, so I'm looking forward to seeing them again. How great would it be if the Pelicans just go toe-to-toe with the Warriors and nobody sees that coming? Because as you said, nobody's really talking about the Warriors right now.
That's the most interesting thing. I think this Pelicans team, for the first time, really has been put on the map. And like, you think about losing a top five, top seven player in the NBA.
Yeah, they're doing this without Boogie. That's the craziest part.
I think that's the part that like gets forgotten about this Pelicans team. It's like, the Pelicans made so many good moves, especially after DeMarcus Cousins got hurt. I think one of the biggest moves was, I know that was kind of simultaneously, but bringing in Nico Mirotic, who for this Bulls team, it wasn't a fit, and we already have gone over that a million times. But what he's doing for that Pelicans team, and I think nationally this year, I know Nico's run in the seven-game wins and whatever, like that was a little bit of a storyline, but I think collectively this season, Nico's played at the highest level he's ever played at. And the impact that he's having with Anthony Davis, and like I've said it multiple times, and if you watch this Pelicans series at all, Nico's been opening up the floor for Anthony Davis and for Rajon Rondo to do these types of things. And for Nico Mirotic to be able to shoot 35-40% from three and stretch the defense out the way they did against Portland, you know, guys like that, and then you talk about Jrue Holiday. Talk about a guy that got slammed when the Pelicans paid him all of that money, you know, what was that, 2 years ago, and said, really, you're going to give Jrue Holiday, invest all of, what was it, like $70 or $80 million into Jrue Holiday? And they got ripped for it. And look at him going off for 41 points in one of the games and being one of the most crucial pieces to that Pelicans team right now. And then you brought up Etuan Moore, which is, he's been flown under the radar all season long, and I think he's been fantastic for them as well. A guy that I can think of, too, that maybe that they get one knock for is Solomon Hill. And the funny thing is I think there's a couple guys in this playoffs, and I don't know if you feel this way, but Solomon Hill and also Bismack Biyombo come up for me as two guys that made their name in the playoffs and got paid and then don't turn out to be maybe exactly what you paid them for. Solomon Hill did this with the Pacers in his final year. He had a great 6 weeks to the end of the season and then had a great first round of the playoffs when they got knocked out. So it's similar. So can you think of anybody right now in these first rounds that maybe is putting on a show coming into a contract year or maybe in a year or two that maybe making their case?
Yeah.
Who are you thinking
of? We were just talking about him. Nico freaking Mirotic.
I mean, he's got another year at least.
He got zero offers last summer. Zero. And he got traded to a new team. When he got to that new team, they won on a very dominant stretch from post-All-Star break into locking up a playoff spot and was a big part of them unexpectedly sweeping their way into the second round of the playoffs. Nico, good for him. Like you said, we've been over it a million times why he wasn't a fit here and it was best for all parties that he moved on. He might actually play himself into a big contract as a guy who, like you're just saying, you have a dominant big on a team and you need somebody around him who can stretch the floor, space the floor, create space. Nico can do that. He's certainly showing it in this playoff run and has been doing so since he got to New Orleans. To me, that's the first name that comes to mind if you ask me who's making themselves out to be a guy who is due a big contract because of this playoff performance so far. Nico's the obvious answer.
I would go along with another guy that's in Milwaukee in Jabari Parker, and that I think still plays. It still has a little bit to play out. Let's see what he does with the rest of this series and the rest of the run in the playoffs. And obviously, it's a little different when you're talking about Jabari Parker, who's number two overall, and the injuries and all of that. But what he is right now, coming back from an injury, is a type of guy that I think is going to command a lot of money, especially if the Bucks do advance and he plays really well in that second round, or even in this series, continues to play really well. The age, the fact that it sounds like he doesn't want to be Milwaukee, that whole thing, even though he is playing well, and no matter where the Bucks go, I still don't think that he's coming back. So that plays a factor too. I don't think he's going to be a complete bust, but I just think a team probably is going to go out there and overpay him if he doesn't get a sort of contract like a 1-1. But Nico's another one, an interesting one, but he's locked up for next year too. So I think he's going to have to build off of this season and play just as well or maybe a little bit under what his performance was this season to really capitalize on that market that maybe he wanted when he was with the Bulls at $16 to $22 million this past summer. So we'll see. I think those two players are pretty interesting. I'm trying to think of anybody else in this playoffs that's really stood out to me in terms of maybe coming up to a free agency in the next year or so besides those two guys. But it's definitely interesting. There's a lot of guys to go back to it, though. Solomon Hill is one of them that you could kind of name on that Pelicans team. But overall, this Pelicans team, I think, has flown under the radar, especially when a lot of people wrote them off after Boogie Cousins got his Achilles torn back, you know, in mid-February. So definitely a really fun team to watch, though, in this playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said earlier, I cannot wait to watch that series, assuming the Warriors advance. I think Pelicans-Warriors could be just as entertaining as whoever it is that the Rockets end up facing, whether that's Utah or Oklahoma City, which in its own right is going to be a great series too.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're going to discuss maybe some playoff teams that maybe their time is ticking, and with a lot of cap space, not a lot of teams have a lot of money to spend this offseason, so maybe with the turn of events in some of these teams in the playoffs, maybe there's going to be some decisions made as far as stars on their team and whether or not things will get blown up, and where maybe the Bulls can come into that sort of scenario coming up this summer. So stay here with us at Locked On Bulls. All right, as we finish up here, the playoffs have been a whole lot of fun, and I think the one thing that I've been monitoring the most as far as talent and what these teams are doing, and as a Bulls fan, as a team that is in its first year of its rebuild, end of the first year, starting the second, this summer is very important, not only for the players, but for the front office as well, and it's getting people curious not only how the Bulls are going to spend their money over maybe the next 2 years, 3 years, with all the cap flexibility that they do have. They're one of the few teams this summer that actually has money to spend. It's the Bulls, the Dallas Mavericks, the Atlanta Hawks, the Sacramento Kings, all teams that are still considered tanking, still considered rebuilding, but do have a lot of flexibility this summer. The Lakers also one of those teams. So it got me interested to think about what the goals are for the Bulls next year. And if they're not going to spend a lot of money this offseason, which I predict they're not going to, you do too as well, Matt, what can the Bulls do to be savvy and to try to continue to collect assets, continue to build on what they did this season, which I thought for the most part was a success, from the players on the floor to the moves that the Bulls did make, bringing in a lot of good guys. There's a lot more positive moves than there were negative moves. So this summer, I'm curious, there has to be a couple teams looking in the playoffs, cough, cough, Portland, who just got swept by this Pelicans team we were talking about. They've got to look at their salary cap over the next year, 2 years, and start to question things. You know, how many times are we going to go into the playoffs as a 3, a 4, a 5, a 6 seed, get bounced out after the first round, get bounced out after the second round? Like, the Clippers were in this situation for a long time with DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, and Chris Paul. So, Matt, I guess I pose this question to you. Have you been keeping your eye on teams that maybe look like they're struggling and maybe where the Bulls could capitalize on maybe taking on a bad contract but also adding assets, maybe like a team like Portland or the Clippers or even the Washington Wizards? I know they tied the series up with the Raptors, but anything that has gotten you to start thinking about this and what the Bulls could potentially do before the NBA draft?
Yeah, obviously, and it's, you know, largely because they're the first team that's gotten bounced, and they did so unexpectedly and in pretty embarrassing fashion. Portland, especially with some of the contracts they have on their books, I mean, they are in cap hell. They're the first team that comes to mind when you think about teams that might be looking to blow things up. And there's already talk about whether or not Terry Stotts is going to be fired, if that sweep was his fault. And I think, you know, Terry Stotts is a good coach. He's not a great coach. And I don't know how much of the Portland Trail Blazers cap issues and the roster that they have coming into this offseason you can blame on him. I mean, he's not the GM. He didn't sign those guys to those contracts. If you talk about the Blazers maybe blowing things up, okay, so like their backcourt, which is arguably one of the best backcourts in the Western Conference, surely, if not the entire league, in Dame and CJ McCollum, they're still in their prime. Dame's 26, McCollum's 25. Dame has 3 years and about $90 million left on his contract. McCollum also has 3 years and about $80 million left on his. Do you want to get rid of either of those guys? And then the other more troublesome part is that they have guys like Evan Turner do upwards of almost $40 million over the next two seasons. And then Myers Leonard is due another $22 million over the next two seasons. Like, those are some bad contracts. So they might look to try to move a couple of those bad contracts while not really completely blowing things up and keeping their backcourt duo together. The Bulls, I think, will at least listen, whether it's Portland or some other team that might be trying to shed a bad contract from the 2016 spending spree that happened, because they have the flexibility to do so. But we did hear from Paxson that, yes, they did get some interesting offers from Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday leading up to this season's deadline, but they didn't bite on them because they both contained long-term money that was ugly. And they still already have, from that Nico trade, have to deal with Omer Sheik's contract, and that's most likely going to be stretched to optimize their fiscal situation there. But if they weren't willing to do that, and maybe it's just because it was a really, really bad contract, like somebody was trying to get him to take Joakim's contract or Luol Deng's contract or something like right. that. But so it'll depend on just how bad that contract is and how many years are on it. But it's certainly something within the realm of possibility that the Bulls have to look at all of the options and take all phone calls. Because as you said, that makes more sense this summer than going out and trying to spend big on landing a free agent, because this team, plain and simple, is not ready to compete
yet. See, I'm with you. So to talk about Portland real fast, because you brought up an interesting point, Evan Turner is somebody that is a name that comes up for me. And I don't know, and this would be something that I feel like we can maybe put out our feelers to people in Portland, How closely is Portland attached to Evan Turner? He's got 2 years left on his deal, owed, like you said, around $36 million, 17.8 next year, and then the following year.
I'm pretty sure Portland would love it if somebody took that contract off.
So this is my thing. Evan Turner's from Chicago, grew up here, right around the, he played alongside the same leagues as Derrick Rose did here. I was listening to a podcast just recently that Evan Turner was on, and he talked about growing up here in Chicago and just, you know, going to outside places, going to Ohio State and saying, you know, he had no idea football was even like an interest, which is kind of crazy for a guy from Chicago. But he said basketball is all he lived. But he said if he could go to two teams in the league right now, he said the Bulls would be number one on his list. He's had a dream of playing for his hometown team. And then he said wherever LeBron was. So that being number two. So I think that's an interesting thing. Like if Portland is trying to free up money, roughly $35 million over the next 2 years, and the Bulls desperately need wing help, whether you're going to get it from a veteran or not, or you're going to get it from a young guy this season, Evan Turner for two more years at $17.8 million. I know you got to pay Zach LaVine, but Evan Turner would be a pretty solid option. I don't know what your asset you're getting in return for that is. You could scroll down the list of young players that the Portland Trailblazers have, or you could take a look at their late round pick. Either of those, would you be interested at all in that and taking on that money for a year or two? Do you think the Bulls front office, more importantly, would be interested in taking a deal maybe advantageously for a position that they need to fill in terms of like the position?
If you're asking me if I would be on board for the Bulls bringing over Evan Turner and the Chicago connection there because they need wing help, I don't, Evan Turner's 28. Like, what's the difference between bringing, and he's basically just a shooting guard, an oversized shooting guard who isn't very good. That, to think about the fact that he went number two overall in that 2010 draft, it was 2010, right? I mean, NBA career has been pretty much a disappointment. And, like, the Bulls already did that with Justin Holiday. They brought in a veteran, you know, shooting guard, and they paid Justin Holiday a lot less money than they would be paying Evan Turner next year and the year after. So, I mean, unless the Blazers were sweetening the deal by sending the Bulls one of their young guys who might actually have some potential or some use, or, of course, you know, a future draft pick, I don't see the point from the Bulls' perspective.
So, yeah, my point is about him is, like, it's not more about Evan Turner and the player that you're getting in that. It's exactly what you just said to finish up, is the sweetener. Whether it's a pick or it's a young player, like, obviously they're not going to trade Zach Collins. Zach Collins was an important piece to them this season. But in order to free up money to maybe bring back Yusuf Nurkic, I don't know how much money he's going to get on the market this year, but a very talented young player, and his qualifying offer is at $4.1 million. He's going to skyrocket that. So I think in order to try and bring back Yusuf Nurkic and not just completely destroy yourself, the Portland Trailblazers are going to have to free up some money. It's either that or they're going to have to look and say, you know what, maybe we're going to have to trade CJ McCollum, or maybe we're going to have to trade Damian Lillard. I know that's insane to talk about, but at some point you get a little bit of tiresome of getting into the first round playoffs and just getting knocked out after having a successful season. I think this has been a complete disappointment for Portland, who was the number three seed, played really well in the West for the almost the entirety of the season. But I think that's the biggest point here is, like, if you're going to bring a guy over like Evan Turner, or if you're getting a piece to take off the books like Mo Harkless, who's still younger, he's been in and out of the rotation for Portland a lot. Myers Leonard, I think, is pretty much you can scratch off unless you're trading Robin Lopez back. I don't think the Bulls need to continue to add centers or big men, especially if they're looking for somebody maybe with that late pick on this first round. So that can be pretty much scratched off. But that's what I'm saying, like, here, tossing out ideas like we were doing at the trade deadline of what contracts do some of these teams that are middling in these playoffs, somewhere between the 5 and the 8 seed, that are looking to take that next step and free up some of this money and try to change things up. Another team for me, Matt, was the Washington Wizards. And obviously, it's been a little bit of a turnaround from going down 2-0 to tying the series with Bradley Beal stepping up and John Wall. There have been conversations, you know, about whether or not they are going to bring back this team next year. You know, they've got a lot of money tied up as well, $124 million on their cap for next season. Somebody that I was thinking here, and I know I just said you probably can scratch off any center taking on a bad contract, but I mean, if you were looking at this Wizards team and they were looking up to free up some money to sign guys next year to bring in other valuable pieces, I mean, you can look at Mahinmi's contract, who's owed $32 million over the next 2 years. You can look at Marcin Gortat's contract, who's off the books after next season. I don't know if the Wizards would be able to would even think about doing this, but keeping Bradley Beal, John Wall together, and Otto Porter Jr., keeping all three of those guys together, would they be willing to sacrifice and give up a guy like Kelly Oubre? I don't know how you feel about his game. Just watching him in these playoff series, dude, I am a huge fan of his game and think he would be awesome in a Fred Hoiberg system. He's tough, he's gritty, he plays with a lot of edge, and I think that's what he gives the Wizards a ton of. So if you can get a guy like that and a sweetener that you have to take Jan Mahinmi's contract on for two more years, I'm all about it.
Yeah, I mean, when you mentioned the Wizards, the first name I thought of was Kelly Oubre. And it is kind of an unknown right now what the Wizards will end up doing. I don't see them beating Toronto in this series right now. I think they're going to have a first-round exit again. And for as much as people talk about the combo of Beal and Wall, and are they underrated or overrated or accurately, I've always thought that the Beal-Wall combo is kind of overrated. And, you know, you mentioned that Otto Porter Jr. is kind of like their key third guy right now, and he's still owed quite a bit of money. He signed a four-year, $100 million deal. If the Wizards did want to make a move and shed a contract, I would absolutely love the Bulls taking a flyer on Kelly Oubre. He's still only 21. He is, you know, a wing that has potential on both sides of the floor. He's going to be restricted free agent next summer, so the Bulls would have him under team control for at least a season and then have his bird rights and would be able to, you know, match any offers that he may get in the summer of 2019 if he came over this summer in, you know, like a leading up to a draft kind of trade and would like to, you know, keep him in town after that. I agree. I like what I've seen from Kelly Oubre since he's come in. I mean, he certainly was a solid player for Kansas at the collegiate level, and I like what I've seen from him in the NBA. I would have no problem with the Bulls maybe taking on a Wizards contract that they don't want, assuming that it's not long-term, maybe one or two at max, we're talking, taking on a contract that the Wizards are trying to shed and getting him in return. But again, I mean, if the Wizards are trying to shift some things around, they might see Kelly Oubre as a big piece of their future, and he might be off limits.
Yeah, that was the point I was going to bring up, is like, it sounds all good and great. Like, yes, we would love to have that guy, but how do the Wizards feel about, you know, some of these guys being on their books and maybe them having to think about trading, you know, Wall or Beal, or, you know, how about them, quick side note, how about them probably second guessing themselves, signing that offer sheet, matching the offer sheet from the Nets last summer, where the Nets would have taken Otto Porter at whatever it was, $100 million. And I mean, for a guy that is getting paid $23 million a year, he's a 14-7 guy, like 14-6 guy. Yeah. So that's part of the problem there, is a lot of your money's tied up in him. A lot of money's tied up in Bradley Beal. A ton of money is tied up in John Wall. So in order to kind of be flexible and maybe try and make that second push, and I mean, we're talking about a Wizards team who just squeaked in, you know, and so.
And they really aren't that young.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like Wall's 27 and Beal's 24, so their two-star players are still prime. But like, if you're talking about trying to like keep things competitive, if you're the Wizards front office, like Oubre is really the only young prospect that they have right now.
Yeah, and the bad thing is he's kind of logjam behind Otto Porter. You know what I mean? For being a guy that's truly a player
who himself is only 24. So it's like they got their three key guys: Beal, Porter, and Wall. Wall is 27. Beal and Porter are 24. Behind them, Oubre is really the only young prospect they have on this team.
So I thought about it too, like next year, what their decision making is going to be and how they would move some of these contracts. Obviously, the first thing is like your two assets that you have on a team for a team that's looking to make the playoffs is Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday. You could do a deal where it's Jan Mahinmi and Kelly Oubre for Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday. Now, both of those guys are off the books next year for the Wizards, which kind of is more advantageous for them. It gives them solid players to maybe make a push back to the playoffs again and then recuperate in 2019 when they have a little bit more money to spend and maybe can go after some of those big-time free agents that are going to be out there in 2019 or 2020. So definitely some interesting options there. Like, and Robin Lopez is the type of player that I think would fit well in sort of that pick-and-roll type of play that Bradley Beal and John Wall, especially John Wall, loves to play. So yeah, and Justin Holiday would be a pretty interesting piece coming off that bench, a shooter, a scorer, a guy that really the Washington Wizards have been kind of lacking off that bench. So yeah, I don't know what their decision-making is going to be about Kelly Oubre. Would definitely love to see him. If that was part of like the sweetener, the asset that the Bulls could get from the Wizards, I don't care what contract you've got to take on. He would be a whole lot of fun to see alongside growing with guys like Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen, and then whoever you take this summer as well. So definitely interesting. One last team, Matt, before we get out of here, I wanted to talk about in terms of taking on contracts and maybe trying to free up some money is the Miami Heat. I know it's a lot of names right now that kind of mesh together, and Eric Spoelstra has done a good job of getting all these guys to work together, but a lot of names that are owed a lot of money. What's funny is Chris Bosh is still on this on the payroll of 2018-2019. They owe him $26.8 million. Hassan Whiteside's owed roughly about $50 million over the next 2 years. You got Goran Dragic next year at $18.1 million. Guys like James Johnson, former Bull, $14 million.
How about Tyler Johnson? They signed him to 4 years, 50.
I know, and that is truly...
He's due $40 million, just under $40 million over the next 2 years.
That is truly ugly. So I don't know what the Heat's plan is as well, is whether or not they're trying to take a next step. They've got Waiters under a really nice contract. You've still got Hassan Whiteside there. Sort of their core pieces are going to be there for the next two seasons. I wonder if, and plus you got Justice Winslow on a pretty nice deal so far for the next 2 years. So I don't know what you could do with the Heat, whether it's, you know, taking their pick or a future pick in order to take on a contract like we were talking about in a Tyler Johnson, or if it's a guy like Bam, where they're willing to give up one of their younger assets. So that's another team that has a logjam of contracts for the next 2 or 3 years. It's still hanging around the playoffs.
I mean, like you look at the Heat's draft pick situation. They have no picks incoming. Outgoing picks, 2018 first rounder going to Phoenix. 2018 second rounder going to Houston. 2019 second rounder going to Minnesota. 2020 second rounder going to Sacramento. List goes on and on and on. They got picks going all the way to 2024 and no picks incoming. So if the Heat are going to try to shed a contract, I would have a tough time believing that Pat Riley is sending away any more draft picks, knowing that they got to do something. They have a couple interesting young pieces, namely Justin Winslow, but Hassan Whiteside is not happy in Miami. Dragic isn't getting any younger. I mean, like Kelly Olynyk, you're not building a team around him. The Heat have to start making hits on their draft picks, not giving them away.
So they're going to have to make a decision about Wayne Ellington as well, because he was up there as one of the best three-point shooters this season, and he's coming off a $6.2 million contract. So I don't know what they're going to do, if you're just going to let him walk for nothing.
And he's unrestricted this
summer.
So
I don't know if that's part of their deal. I know they really like Josh Richardson a lot, and he's getting paid over the next 4 years as well. So he's a piece too, but like you said, like if they're going to want to shed a pretty big contract, like that James Johnson contract's pretty ugly. The Tyler Johnson one's pretty ugly. They're going to have to maybe make a decision on Justice Winslow, who I know that's been kind of their piece. You know, after LeBron and Bosh sort of left, Justice Winslow was sort of that piece to sort of come in and be their young star. I don't know if they still have those plans as an organization, but maybe they're at a point too where they know they've got way too much money tied up for the next few years, and they're just going to be one of those playoff teams. You know, see what we can do with this roster at, you know, anywhere between 4 and 7, and hey, you know, if we upset a team in the first round or we make it to the second round, hey, that's applause for us. But this team just doesn't seem like they're too tied up in money to seem like that they could go after and really make that next leap, especially when you talked about Hassan Whiteside not liking it there and a few other guys that just don't seem like it fits completely, especially for the money that they're making.
Well, hey, at least they got finally in shape Dwayne Wade. You know, who knows what the future holds for Wade and Miami, but you know, he's a free agent this summer. Yeah, he's getting paid for the Bulls, but Maybe he'll stick around and play for a few more years and decide that he actually doesn't want to be fat and totally useless.
Well, I think
sorry.
Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On.
Wait, hold on, Jordan. Yes. Before we get out of here, we haven't touched on the most important thing. It is more important than the NBA playoffs and what the Bulls are doing this offseason. What the F is going on with Joakim Noah's beard?
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Joakim's beard?
Uh-uh.
Oh, my God. Okay. As soon as we log off of this podcast, go on Joakim's Instagram. It's all over Twitter, too. He has a blonde beard. He's like hanging out in some tropical vacation environment, and he has posted a couple of videos. His beard is blonde, and I don't understand what's going on.
Oh, wow. Okay, it's loading. This is bad radio. I'm looking for it right now. Oh, wow.
Holy what is that?
Shit.
What on earth is that?
What is
What
he
is
doing?
That about? What is that about?
Oh, man. He's got like a golden retriever growing on his face or something. I have no idea what
yeah.
that's... What? Wow.
Joakim may have finally just snapped, man. I don't know who told him that that beard was a good idea, but...
You know what? If you're a Defensive Player of the Year winner, you're a two-time NCAA champion, and you're a guy with $72 million plus in your pockets, he can do whatever the hell he wants. And that's exactly what he's doing. And like, that's the thing I love about Joakim. And there's a lot of other players around the NBA that are like this. Guys that just do what they know that they're hated, and they embrace that type of mentality, and they just do whatever they want. And so, like you said, I think this beard is very strange, but I mean, he's doing whatever he wants.
It's funny, we're talking about teams that are trying to shed bad contracts this summer. Is there any contract in the NBA less valuable than Joakim's right now?
Man, he deserves that money.
Sad to say it. Really sad to say it, but I mean, it's true. That contract that Phil Jackson signed him to was just a bad idea, and it's not as bad as that beard on his face. Come on, Joakim. You keep the beard if you want. I think Joakim looks good with the beard, but why is it blonde?
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, have a wonderful Monday afternoon, Monday evening for you Bulls fans. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.